welcome back to X-Men Unraveled. I'm your host, Noelle, and I follow the stories of the X-Men in chronological order. Thank you for your patience, as this episode was extremely delayed. I really hate doing that, but it was a mental health break. I tried to remind myself that this is a free podcast that I make on my own, so I hope you understand that sometimes life gets in the way. And since I decided to make my life difficult in doing this in chronological order, there's a lot to do before an episode can come out. So thank you again for putting up with the delay. I'm not expecting this to happen again anytime soon. While I've been away, there was a trial of Max Eisenhart on Gray Malkin Lane, and if you've not checked that out yet, you are missing out. It's all about Magneto, and I've got shirts and stickers everywhere. And I'm actually working on a Magneto cross-stitch, so I was very excited to be part of his trial. There are two parts. Part one is his backstory, and that is obviously a lot to cover, so we focused on the main points up until his life in the 60s comics. This, of course, includes many tragedies of his early years, including surviving the Holocaust and the loss of his daughter, so be prepared for those conversations if you go listen. The trial itself covers his actions up through the same period, all pre-Claremont, and those were much more lighthearted and fun conversations. I actually had to prosecute him for one of his crimes, which was hard for me because I don't like to admit that Magneto has done anything wrong ever, but I did my job. It was so much fun. Go give it a listen if you haven't already, and go support Gray Malkin Lane. Heads up, this is kind of a short episode from me today, so you have time to go check that out. You don't want to miss it. So I've been covering the backgrounds of each of the original X-Men, and today we're on to the fourth member, Henry McCoy, better known as the Beast. His background is more similar to Iceman in that there's a relatively small amount of information regarding his early life, but he has one very strange experience before joining the X-Men. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's no way around it. So this is your warning. You gotta love those crazy 60s stories, especially because we're about to head into a whole bunch of them in the coming episodes. As with the other OG team members, Henry McCoy first appears in Uncanny X-Men number 1, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And Beast is another character like Professor X, whose personality gets an overhaul in TV and film adaptations of the comics. On the page, especially in these early years, he can be really entertaining, but later on he goes down some pretty dark paths that diverge drastically from the genteel Beast in the animated series or the nerdy but endearing Hank of the early years in the comics. But for today, we're meeting a young Hank McCoy, so let's get started with who Beast is. Henry, or Hank McCoy's, origin story is told in Uncanny X-Men numbers 49 to 52 from 1968. It's retold a couple of places elsewhere, in X-Men Origins Beast and Uncanny Origins, but they generally just retell the 60s version, silly antics and all. So I'm just sticking with the original Uncanny version. Hank is the son of Norton McCoy and Edna Andrews. We actually learn her maiden name, which hasn't been the case for Scott Summers or Bobby Drake's mothers. Shortly after Norton and Edna get married, Norton starts working at the generically named Atomic Energy Plant. Edna expresses her concern to Norton about the potential effects of radiation and the dangers of the job, and it turns out she's totally right to worry. One day there is a major incident with one of the reactors at the plant, and it's about to cause a meltdown. Norton bravely rushes in to fix the issue, and risks his life to prevent a radioactive disaster. Surprisingly, he recovers despite a pretty massive radiation exposure. One shot is of him entirely covered in bandages. I watched Chernobyl, and people don't just get over massive radiation exposure like that. But this is a comic, and Norton survives without any lingering injuries or effects. But Edna demands that he quit his job and says to either get a new job or get a new wife. Norton decides that the new job is the better option, and they move away to a new town and presumably safer work for Norton. Not long after the nuclear incident, the McCoys learn that Edna is pregnant. In Uncanny Origins number 6, her doctor expresses concerns about the effects of radiation exposure. This issue also says that Norton became a farmer, but I saw no other corroboration of this. So let's just leave a little asterisk next to that statement. When Henry McCoy is born, there are no visible effects of radiation exposure, aside from exceptionally large hands and feet. He can even use his feet to hold a bottle when he's a few months old, and he's exceptionally strong at a young age. One time he grabs his pediatrician's hand hard enough to hurt the grown man. And he gets older and starts jumping around acrobatically and even getting in trouble at school for his antics, but he's also extremely intelligent. His parents assume that his appearance and abilities are from the radiation exposure, but they don't tell young Henry about it until he starts getting made fun of at school. Of course, this story is from the 60s. Now we know it's not the radiation that affected Henry, it's just the manifestation of his X gene. When Hank is a freshman in high school, he finds himself recruited for the football team. And the football coach one day is in the middle of criticizing his current players when Hank walks by. The coach says he bets he could grab any freshman in the school and make a better team. I personally didn't play sports, but this sounds like a shitty coach to me. So Hank's just walking by and gets dragged into the situation. Coach grabs him and tells him to kick a field goal. Hank makes it from a pretty decent distance, and then the coach has him throw a pass. Hank throws it so hard that he almost injures the coach. And so now he finds himself on the football team. Hank does very well and makes a name for himself as the star player. And there's one really silly part of the story where he stops a robbery during a game. Some thieves show up at a game to rob the ticket office, but the cops, I don't know, I guess they know what's going on. They're waiting outside, or maybe they're just security. But the thieves see the cops and make a decision to try and run through the stadium to escape. Hank, who is in the middle of a game, sees what's going on and throws the ball at one of the robbers, knocking him down for the cops to catch. Then he throws his helmet and another player's helmet at two more of the thieves, but the last one ends up in a standoff with the cops, and for some reason this ticket office thief is holding a grenade. So Hank climbs up onto the field goal post and leaps off to tackle him. The man drops the grenade without pulling the pin, fortunately, and gets arrested, and Hank saves the day. Star player saves everyone from a grenade. So if he hadn't already made a name for himself, this certainly would have done it. But Hank's athletic ability and impressive show during the game and robbery get him some unwanted attention from a mysterious man going by the name El Conquistador, and he's dressed in old-timey armor and everything. And this is the part I was telling you that is just absolutely, unmitigatedly ridiculous. So El Conquistador tells his sidekick Chico that Hank is perfect to use in his plan for world domination. He also has an army of soldiers literally dressed for the Spanish invasion of the Americas. There's a lot of crazy stories in the 60s, but this one sets the bar pretty high. So after Hank's game-winning and robbery-stopping day, he's walking home, and he's just minding his own business walking down a street when a truck drives straight at him. Hank, of course, is able to leap out of the way unharmed, but right next to the road, there's this giant pit from construction, and Hank has to do some extra acrobatics to avoid a fall. It turns out this was all planned by El Conquistador, who wanted to test the limits of Hank's abilities by driving a truck at him. El Conquistador sees that Hank survives and does his acrobatics, and he radios to his minions that carried out the attempted hit and run, saying that Hank passed the test and now they need to capture him. Two of the minions try to throw a net over Hank, but he leaps away, making a joke about them being bird catchers. They then try to grab him, but Hank is still able to get away. But just when it seems like he might escape, the conquistador appears, sword in hand, and tells Hank that he's not going to be a match for him. And the conquistador's sword at this point transforms into a trident that shoots an electric shock at Hank. So with Hank tased and incapacitated, the conquistador is able to bring him back to his lair. Fortunately for Hank, he has also gotten the attention of Professor X and his three current X-Men, Cyclops, Iceman, and Angel. So Xavier sends Iceman to go scout out Hank's house and make contact with Hank, presumably to recruit him. But when Iceman arrives at the McCoys' house, no one is home, and Hank's parents are missing, and there's a sign of a struggle. So Iceman goes back to the mansion to report what he found, and Professor X says ominously that someone else must have gotten to Hank first. Back at El Conquistador's lair, Hank is tied to a chair and in the middle of listening to the Conquistador's demands. Either go along with his nefarious plan, or he's going to murder Hank's parents, who are captured and tied up by the Conquistador's men. El Conquistador apparently has control of an abandoned power station and has it back online to power what he calls his, quote, electronic arsenal. I don't know, and it's not clarified, who the Conquistador is. Is he some immortal dude from the 15th century? Is he just some wannabe conquistador who's dressed like one? I don't know. But he's put together this weapon system to take over the world, and he wants to use Hank to obtain a miniaturized power source held by the government that can work like a small mobile power plant. Hank doesn't want any part of this, of course, but with his parents' lives on the line, he doesn't have a choice but to go along with the plot. Meanwhile, Professor X is using Cerebro to try and track down Hank's location, and when he does, he sends the three teenage X-Men directly into action. By this time, the Conquistador has brought Hank to the government's facility, holding the power generator, and Hank is pretty easily able to avoid detection by any guards and just goes ahead and jumps right over the fence into the facility. I don't know if this says much for Hank's abilities or the lack of security at the actual plant. And conveniently, the generator is held in a building with 20-foot tall walls, but no windows, so the top is just like open, where windows should be. So Hank scales the wall and drops right inside to the reactor. No guards in place there either. Hank knows he has no choice but to steal it if he wants to save his parents, but he's afraid of what the Conquistador will be able to do once he actually has the power source. Not seeing any choice, he goes along with the plan and grabs the power source. Hank thinks the plan is going pretty smoothly, but the reactor was surrounded by alarms set off by motion. So they start going off, and two armed guards rush in and demand that Hank stop, or they will shoot to kill. Hank doesn't listen, and he's able to leap at the guards, kick them both away, and get out of the building. Outside, a few more guards try to stop him, but Hank is successful in escaping with the power source and bringing it back to the Conquistador. But when Hank brings it to him and says that, okay, I did my part, so release my parents, the Conquistador goes ahead and just slaps Hank across the face and reveals that he's going to continue holding Hank's parents hostage until Hank is no longer useful to him. And we find out in the next conversation between El Conquistador and his minion Chico that the power source is a solar generator, and once it is able to gather enough sunlight, it will be able to power all of El Conquistador's arsenal of weapons. And once that happens, he plans to launch an attack on all the world's capitals at once. And this was written in the 60s. Here we are all these years later. If only solar power was that powerful. Hank is trying to figure out how to stop the Conquistador's plan and rushes over to try and tear apart the energy transmitters. But the Conquistador stops him with a shield that shoots out electric blasts, knocking Hank away. Hank then has to dodge an attack from Conquistador's trident taser thing, but he ends up trapped, and the Conquistador is about to attack. But just then, Cyclops blasts his way into the room through a steel door, followed by Iceman and Angel. The Conquistador calls in part of his army to fight off the mutants, and Hank joins the X-Men in the fight. I think he says something like, "I have no idea who you are, but you seem to be on my side." Unfortunately, this distraction of Hank and the X-Men fighting the army has given the Conquistador time to set his plan into motion, and the solar power source is charged up. He's about to set off the attack. Hank and the X-Men are getting ready to go attack him, but then they receive a mental message from Professor X to evacuate the building immediately. Because when El Conquistador switches on the device, it overloads and the building explodes, killing El Conquistador and any of his remaining minions in the blast. The X-Men are able to rush out and escape in time, and they find Professor X, who tells them that he was able to use his telekinetic powers to alter the circuitry and cause the explosion. This isn't normally a power that Xavier has, but I guess they wrote it in so he could save the day. But then they all realize that Hank is nowhere to be seen. But of course we know Hank survives, and it turns out that he, in the escape, went to go grab his parents, get them out, and he brought them to safety as well. So everyone made it out who wasn't a bad guy. Then Professor X, the X-Men, and the McCoys all return to the McCoy household. Of course, that is when he extends an invitation for Hank to join the team. Hank accepts, taking on the codename Beast, and Professor X wipes the memories of everyone in town about Hank's exceptional abilities, including Hank's parents. I am positive I've mentioned it in each of these episodes so far, but I really hate this memory-wiping habit of Xavier's, and it's only going to continue and get worse. But I just have to say it every time it happens. And that is the mostly ridiculous story of how Hank McCoy joins the X-Men. I'm not going to lie, when I got to the part about El Conquistador, I was like, this is just too much. And I went through all of the versions of the story thinking, someone has to have changed this. But in every one, it stays the same. He hasn't gotten a revision like Angel did in Angel Revelations, even though this story might need one more. So we're stuck with a wacky villain dressed like a 15th century Spanish conquistador. But that is how Hank becomes the fourth X-Man, and next episode will be about the final member of the original X-Men squad, Jean Grey. Thank you again for listening. In the meantime, before the next episode, check out the podcast Instagram at X-Men Unraveled, or follow me on Twitter at L Unraveled. That's E-L-L-E Unraveled. Talk to you next time.